Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, July 17th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Hi, I have an appointment with Emily Charlton.
I don't know Emily, but I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist Dr. Dick. The marvelous Mistress Matisse is back with us again today, and this week, she's here as part of the Sex Education podcast series. And as you know, this series takes a look at the world of fetish sex and kink with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. And who better to talk to us about all these things than my favorite sex columnist, blogger, and podcaster, the internationally acclaimed pro-dom, Mistress Matisse.
Oh my God. No, no, no!
I know, it's almost too good to be true. But wait, did you happen to miss part one of our conversation that appeared here last week at this time? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all my podcasts in my podcast archive. All you gotta do is use the search function on my site, drdicksexadvice.com, type in podcast number 215, and voila! But don't forget the pound sign when you do your search.
Excuse me, where do you think you're going?
Well, not anywhere right this minute, but Matisse invites you and me to enter her world and visit her on one of her websites, mistressmatisse.blogspot.com, mistressmatisse.com, or read her column, Control Tower, at thestranger.com. Today's fabulous podcast is brought to you by Papaya Toys. You know, I've been involved in all sorts of cutting-edge sex education and sexual enrichment projects over the past 30 years. That's why I was so delighted when the makers of Papaya Toys invited me to assist them in designing, developing, and promoting their superior quality toys that fit the human body and enhance sexual pleasure.
Anyway, you ended up disappointing me more than any of the other silly girls.
And I thought you were going to be really proud of me. Oh well. Listen, you can have the utmost confidence that all the wonderfully fun and playful Papaya Toys are made of the highest quality materials. 100% medical grade silicon, to be precise. They are German engineered to bring you maximum pleasure, and they will help arouse in you your full sexual potential. Papaya Toys are perfect companions for your private intimate moments, or you can share them with a partner. Either way, you will rediscover passion and have a load of fun doing so. Look for their dazzling banner in the sidebar of my site. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Matisse, and thank you so much for joining us again here this week. I'm still reeling from last week's discussion, and I'm so glad that you brought Monk back with you this week, too, because I want to pick up precisely where we left off. Last week, we were talking mostly about sex wisdom. This week, I'd like to veer into some sex education.
Okay, sounds great.
In a column that you titled, Bear Well, Peep Show, The Lusty Lady Gets the Pink Slip, you wrote, hearing about the closing of my alma mater, Downtown Peep Show, The Lusty Lady, saddens me. It's been years since I was a lusty lady, but working there was a formative experience. I certainly polished my physical graces in that pink hall of mirrors. Many of the women there had years of dance classes and were performance artists. I was at the opposite end of the spectrum. I wasn't clumsy, but I had no formal dance training at all. Which was fine, because to say that one dances at the Lusty Lady is to employ euphemism. I love it. So you unabashedly self-identify as a sex worker. You mentioned that last week, too. And I so admire you for that, because many of us sex workers cannot or will not own who we are or what we do.
to borrow a phrase, we employ euphemism when we talk about our interactions with others.
Well, yeah, people ask you what you do in a social context. Sometimes it's a little awkward because I'm going to say, you know, I'm a professional snake charmer.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, I'm a friend of mine.
Arms dealer.
Well, a friend of mine calls herself a, you know, personal relationship facilitation counselor. <It's> like, we kind of make up all these terms, but I think especially, and this is quite true of pronouns in particular, yeah, there can be kind of a denial that I'm not really a sex worker. I actually saw that at the Lessie Lady some too, because, well, it was like, well, you know, we're behind glass, so we're not like those other girls who dance. And I go, you know, you're not really, you're not fooling anybody.
Right.
Why do you do that?
And some people, you know, I think, you know, sex bloggers are sex workers. I mean, that could cover, you know, a multitude of sins, so to speak.
They want to come to the convention. I'm happy to have them.
Well, that becomes that kind of goes into that whole you were talking about last week. The idea of codification and you know, classes within you know, sex work, and you know, is dancing behind glass better or worse than dancing at a pole versus doing at bachelor parties versus, you know, or does that make you more, you know, where on the scale does it make you versus Aurora?
Yeah, I mean, it's all this jockeying for you know, for kind of class power. And what's, you know, what I know from experience is if you go to the average person who is not in any way, shape, or form involved in the sex industry and try to, like, sell them on the idea that you're not like these other girls because of X, they're just going to look at you and be like, you're crazy. It's like, this is all in vain.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So why don't you say, I'm an outlaw and just be done with it.
And I agree because, I mean, what we need more of in our society is sex outlaws. I think so. Because
I'm
I think a lot
as
of
as I can.
I think that, you know, there's too many laws to my mind, and if you're not breaking at least a few of them from time to time, I think you're not doing it right.
Well, yeah, and you probably are anyway, whether you like
exactly.
think that you are or not.
Exactly.
Yeah, you probably are.
Like if you own a, you know, a sex toy and you live in Georgia or Alabama, you're an outlaw.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you're using it for, you know, a head massage.
Right.
Which is the only way I use
it. Of course.
So. Of course. Getting back to the trenching behind the door.
So how did you become so comfortable with self-identification? And is it liberating and empowering?
You know, let me just sort of say, you know, when you start seeing words like liberating and empowering used to sell bras, those words kind of don't really have a punch to me. You know, and like, you know, like kind of feminine hygiene products and stuff. I'm just like, what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's real to me. And I think to me, this is how I have to operate in the reality that I'm in. And I actually had a therapist once say to me, the thing is, honey, not everyone operates in the same reality that you do.
Yeah.
And I was just thunderstruck by that. I'm like,
yeah.
No, this is reality. How can
yeah.
you not
right.
be operating
right.
in that?
Right.
But they don't. So, but how I kind of live my life is I really want to be as real as possible and not engage in any kind of like little gamey self-deception things, because I think you're setting yourself up for trouble there.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I do it. So if that's, I don't know, liberating and empowering, it's just, but it's real to me and it keeps me sane, shall we say, in a crazy world.
Is, and just, you know, an off-the-cuff comment is, or question, is Jimmy Choo or Prada more empowering or
God, that's a tough
liberating.
One, man. Jimmy's a good boy, but Prada, there's something about Prada.
Oh.
You just got to go
those of
that.
Those of you out there who follow Matisse's Twitters, she often goes shopping and takes us along with her.
I do.
And
I do.
I love it.
It's my porn, you know.
It is. I actually prefer that, too. The regular type. you go on to say in that very same column, while I didn't learn dance steps, I learned another type of erotic performance. I've already worked as an escort and in massage parlors, but those jobs were about touching. At the Lady, I studied the art of visual presentation and verbal stimulation. Since we were paid a flat wage, there was no reason not to experiment with different personas. I tried being a biker chick, a pigtailed country girl, a retro pinup doll, and, oh, yeah, a bitchy dominatrix. Guess which one I decided I liked best? It was training in speaking my sexual thoughts, too. one of the reasons women hesitate to mention edgy sexual fantasies is out of fear that men will think they are giving them immediate, unequivocal consent to them. So being an upfront sexual being, as you are, Matisse, one who owns her eroticism, this is hard work, and I think we mentioned it last week, too. It takes practice, right? Because there's so much pressure in the popular culture to have us deny who we are and what we think and what we hold sacred about sex.
Yeah, I mean, you have to kind of unlearn everything that you've learned as a child, often, unless you've had some really amazing parents. And then you have to keep unlearning all the other messages to kind of get beamed at us every day, even once we're adults.
Yeah. And there's a constant push of, you know, people saying, we don't talk like that, or this is not the time for that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So just to actually balance all those stuff.
Yeah. I remember one time I was standing on the steps of the parish church where I was in residence, and it was confirmation day, and the archbishop was coming, and I was all done up I was all done up in my priestly get up, and
sorry, we went there.
This one lady who was kind of a fun lady at the parish, and she really liked me a lot. And you know, we were standing to the side waiting, you know, for everyone to assemble. And I looked up and I saw a crane fly, which was one of those really long flies that have this really odd-shaped body. And I mentioned to this lady, and I said, you know, those are flying sex organs. You know, they have no mouth parts, and they have no digestive system or nothing like that. They're just, you know, sex organs flying around. She says, can't you monitor yourself? We're about to meet the archbishop.
What better time to talk about flying sex organs?
Exactly. I mean, well, it's the truth. You know, I mean, the crane fly is a crane fly, regardless if the archbishop is standing right next to it or not.
No. His sheer holiness will just dispel any sexual, because you can't be holy in sex.
Exactly. It's the cold shower.
So any tips on how folks might practice this art so that we can do it better?
Any tips? You know, maybe I should start a blog and a column about that.
Oh, I know.
Right about that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'll do that, right. Yeah, about 10 years worth.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, keep practicing. It's kind of like ice skating, you know, just get up off the ice keep skating.
And don't cave. My thing is don't cave to the, you know, the pressures around you, you know, to conform to what is nice. And
fight the power.
That's right.
Fight the power. Accessing my inner black man, right?
Wow.
Yeah,
you went
and it's hot. She went hot there for a moment.
Behaving after last week.
That gag in his mouth is really working. In a column titled Porn Problems, you wrote, "The tricky thing about making porn for me is not being sexual in front of a camera. It's not even having sex attractively with someone you've just met. It's the terribly unnatural timing of it. That's what I found out when I did my first real porn shoot for kink.com 2 weeks ago. My shoot was for Kink's anal sex site, everythingbutt.com, with a lovely woman named Bobby Starr. You don't get a script beforehand in porn, so while I knew ass-fucking would be involved, being the clever, resourceful person you are, I had no idea what the overall theme of the shoot was or what precisely I'd be asked to do with her. That is an unusual situation for a top. But I viewed it as an interesting challenge, and it was the stop-and-go nature of the shoot that was so difficult. Like most films, porn videos are made in short little pieces so that the director would give me a few minutes worth of instruction about lines and actions. Matisse, in this part, you will be bending Bobby over a desk and pull up her skirt slowly, then fondle her ass and tell her how hot it is.
And it was a hot ass. Just for the record, it was a lovely ass.
It was very, very lovely. So being a porn producer myself, I have an intimate perspective on this touchy issue. You seem to suggest that shooting sexual tableaus is not like recording real sexual encounter or a BDSM encounter in real time. Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah. And how is it different? I mean, a real BDSM encounter is a flow, and it's not a tableau. It's not like setting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, in some ways, you know, they edit out the boring parts, you know, and certainly where you like to go and like find that one toy. Yeah, I mean, it's just not like, you don't stop and go in a real scene. And
well, it's actually, ironically, the same director who did this, I interviewed.
Uh-huh.
And because we're talking about his other site, Hogtide, right, mm-hmm. he was on. And the one myth he always wants to tell people, it was like, no, we edit.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will watch mm-hmm. these scenes and think, oh, well, can't everybody do this thing and this position and get fucked and moved and moved and moved? And it's like, no, this took all afternoon,
right.
a whole span of a day. We stopped. They got
right.
water. They changed position. They
right.
got feeling back in their limbs. They
right.
da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, well, that means everybody can get hung upside down, single-tailed, and, you know, skull-fucked by, you know, an entire marching band, right? They did it on camera.
Well,
and they're posted 20 minutes.
If that was true, then we wouldn't need porn about it, because porn exists to exceed our realities. Porn
right.
is supposed to be
yeah.
a fantasy. So,
yeah.
so yeah, and in our fantasies, we can do anything we want to.
Right.
And porn is just supposed to be a representation of a fantasy, not a reality.
However, when I was doing Daddy-O Productions, I mean, my big thing was to capture authentic sexual expression between people. And so my job was to gather a group of people together, men, for our gay porn series, and ask them, you know, to just have a ball with one another, and then me and my crew were going to shoot that. And it was our task to film that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, there was still editing involved after the shoot, you know, just to, you know, from camera angles, because we would shoot like with four cameras and stuff like that. But I had a much greater sense that the stuff that we produced was like authentic, like somebody could say, yeah, that is, you know, I mean.
Well, I mean, editing doesn't make it inauthentic.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and sort of like planning a scene out. I mean, I plan my scenes when I'm
right.
playing,
exactly.
you know, personally. That doesn't make it inauthentic. So it's not that it, you know, it's inauthentic or it's not valid or whatever. It's just, it is not, you know. And I'm sort of topping, but I've never met this girl before. I like, you know, I like walk out 5 minutes before I'm supposed to start doing the scene. I have no idea
yeah.
what she's like,
yeah.
what she's going to enjoy,
yeah.
what I'm going to do. And
yeah.
that's a weird situation for a top. And I have
right.
someone else telling me how to top
right.
her, which is not usually the situation.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm just going to be what it is. And I like
yeah.
Loka. He's a great guy. She's a beautiful girl. Okay, we'll just kind of figure this out as we go along. But it wasn't, you know, normally I play. I know what I'm going to do. I know
mm-hmm.
something about the person.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have a plan, and I don't, you know, I stop and go, and I flow as I want to flow.
Right,
so
right,
it was
right.
an interesting, it was kind of like, you know, trying to let idea to do a dance as someone else
mm-hmm.
told you to how to do it, rather than
mm-hmm.
just making up a dance yourself.
So if you were in charge of filming, would you do it a different way? Would you, you know, say, we're going to set up our cameras and you guys are just going to go at it?
Well, I mean, it depends on what kind of art you want to make. I
right,
mean, I think
right.
Kink.com actually has some, like, live feed kind of
right,
stuff
right.
they're doing now. It's like, okay, well, that's one kind of art.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another. This is very kind of created and,
mm-hmm.
and presented. I mean, as a writer, I understand there's, like, pieces I kind of dash off and it's just, like, bleh, on the page and I hit publish
mm-hmm.
and it's there. And
mm-hmm.
there's pieces where, like, no, I'm going to keep polishing this
right,
and polishing
right, right,
this
right.
and polishing this until it's perfect.
Right.
So it's not, I don't think one is better than the other, but it would be a mistake to think that they are all created the same way.
Right.
And
right.
That, so that's just a perception you have to understand.
So since we're on the topic of BDSM, can we talk a little bit about the role play, the role of endorphins and adrenaline in power play?
Would you like a demonstration of that
yeah,
right
I was
now?
Say,
oh,
no.
Yeah, that's what here.
Okay.
Distract your attention from me. I'm just going to sit over here quietly by myself.
Rock, paper, scissors, or your interview? Are you taking
that?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ah,
oh, you want to show him the claw? Show him the claw.
I don't want the claw. No.
Yeah, okay.
So what would you, the role of endorphins and adrenaline? Well, they're both body chemicals that are fun
right.
things.
Yeah. And so is do you kind of like shoot for one thing or another? I mean, when you're in your professional role, would you know what you're going to try to elicit from the person you're playing with?
No.
Working with?
I mean, not unless I knew them well.
Right.
Certainly once you get to know someone well. I mean, adrenaline is... you can produce adrenaline in someone without touching them, for
right,
example.
Right.
You know, that's that kind of
like
nervous.
Mine is going 60-40
yeah,
already.
Yeah. So that's just like, yeah, new situation. So like if someone came to me with it for the first time,
uh-huh,
before they even get there, they've got adrenaline going.
Right.
So, but endorphins is the body's response to usually physical stimulation of some kind,
mm-hmm,
intense physical stimulation,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, we might call pain, but
mm-hmm,
that's a sort of pejorative word.
Right.
So it doesn't, as far, I'm not a scientist, you know, I'm not a biologist, it's my understanding that you don't get endorphins in the absence of some kind of physical input.
Right. That's
so that's kind of the difference,
right,
as I understand it.
Yeah.
So yeah, if someone wants a physical scene, then I can definitely produce some endorphins in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I can produce adrenaline in someone just that they're like nervous and excited,
right,
and like,
right,
and if I can't produce adrenaline in you, then I'm probably not doing my job very well because you should be scared.
I am.
Trust
me. And I'm sitting
so
way over here.
You are so cute, Richard.
I am just fucking adorable, some might say. Is it fair to assume that you've been both dom and sub?
I have been dominant and submissive. Yes,
okay.
We have to shorten these words.
Yeah, okay.
Just say
right,
the words.
Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
But she didn't say subby or anything.
Oh, you get a small submersible craft? Wow.
I'm showing my old school here. It's like, I've been the top of the bottom. That's actually what
mm-hmm,
I was taught to say.
Okay.
In a scene, definitely still there.
So when did the vocabulary change? Because, you know, when I was coming up, it was top and bottom, and then it became...
Well, the heterosexuals came into this, yeah.
Right. Ah, see,
hey,
they spoil everything.
They don't spoil, they just change things. They
yeah,
change things. Because, well, I mean, most of the gay leather culture that people can readily... the leather culture that people can readily identify in terms of, like, the outfits and the imagery
uh-huh, right,
comes from the gay man's leather culture.
Right.
We all...
That's true.
The Tom of Finland look.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they get that kind of menacing, yeah, Tom of Finland, lots of leather, dark
mm-hmm,
chains and alleys and stuff. That's all from the gay men's culture, who,
mm-hmm,
like, had this shit organized, and, like, they were doing
right,
it way before there was any kind of organized heterosexual
mm-hmm,
or lesbian BDSM culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, and gay men said top and bottom
mm-hmm,
most of the time. And they also said mattresses and layups a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as straight people and lesbians have kind of begun to, like, flow more towards of an organized culture of, like, let's have conferences, let's have, you know, these ways of talking to each other and finding each other that really work. They've adopted some of the gay men's vocabulary and imagery, but they've also sort of brought some of their own.
Right.
And I think that, you know, to me, when I hear, like, you know, I'm a dom, I'm a sub, I think of the heterosexual culture.
Right. That's interesting, because I never thought that. I knew that there had been a change, you know, that the vocabulary has changed, but, you know, you're the first person to have identified it as such. Because, again, in the old days, as I was coming up, we didn't even have words necessarily. I mean, we had keys and we had hankies and things like that, because, you know, in those days, you know, in the 70s, it wasn't okay, you know, it wasn't okay to be gay, let alone to be kinky gay,
mm-hmm,
so it's a tough thing.
I was having a conversation once, I have to tell you the story, but with online, on a message board, with a bunch of mostly straight-identified kinky people, and they were going on and on about how they really, there was this need, they wished they could somehow signal to each other in a public way, and it's really kind of like, subtle, but only other people who would know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like what, and they went on and on, and I was like, people, the gay men have already figured all this out.
Yellow ties on Thursday.
Exactly.
They were like, no, I'm like, no, really, they
right,
did that. It worked
yeah,
for them. You could do it, too. It's already, you don't have to recreate this wheel. It's all right there.
It's
and they
so
were just
true,
astonished to know this. I'm like,
and then Abercrombie and Finch turns around and sells, you know, red and brown hankies, and she sees some hipster with, like, you know, you're like, oh, son, do you have any idea
you
what you're
get
doing?
Fisted. Wow.
Wow. Okay, son.
Or whatever. You have no idea. No.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So,
yeah,
anyway.
So, when it stops being a signal and becomes a fashion statement, we're in trouble.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
So many power players speak in terms of BDSM as being both recreational and cathartic. Do you agree with that? And if you do, could you elaborate a bit?
Well, for me, it's both recreational, professional, and cathartic.
I'm sorry,
so I've
right,
kind of got three.
You got the trifecta there,
but I do.
Yeah, I think it's highly recreational. Aside from being, you know, it's like sexy and erotic, mm-hmm. and it's damned cathartic. I'll say, mm-hmm. yeah, on both ends.
Both ends.
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, like I don't, you know, I'm not gonna play from a place of like anger, but there is absolutely no denying that I've had like an annoying day or whatever, and someone comes in who's like, I'm really a masochist, and I want you to beat me as hard as you can. I'm like, oh yes, okay.
Thank you, Jesus.
And afterwards, I'm like, ah. Oh, God, that felt good. You know, it's not, I'm not angry at that person. It's not, I don't, and that's my, that's a particular thing of mine. I don't like scenes where I have to pretend to hate somebody. Because I just don't, I'm not that way. I'm going to laugh, and I'm going to, like, crack jokes, and I tend to be affectionate. Mm-hmm. I won't hurt you as badly as you permit me, but
I'm
just like, ah!
Well, but that's also, you know, where you come from, and is... You know, like you were talking like last week about like you're being like lady or honorific or whatever. It's like, you're a rampaging state. You scare the hell out of me, but you're this little sweet southern girl. You know, you're not like, I'm towering in my pointed gorgeous with my, you know, the pony girls have driven my cart here and you'll kneel before me because you're an unworthy worm.
Yeah, that's
you don't have to
really
do that.
Doesn't
you
don't.
Speak to
but
me,
you're just
you know.
mean girl.
Only if you let me, and if you, I mean, obviously if you say stop, I'll stop. And I have to feel like you're enjoying it. If mm-hmm. I feel like you're not enjoying it, I'm not going to enjoy it. So, yeah, I want some feedback and I want you to like it. Mm-hmm. In a sort of, you know, really intense sort of way. And I'm tuned into all the ways that people can signal liking it. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of that. But yeah, in that moment, it's just like, there's something just kind of uncoils in me and it comes down my arm and out my hand and it's good. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I mean, it's contagious too because, you know, I've been in social situations with you. And before I knew it, I was taking my shirt off and having someone stick me with him. And I thought to myself, look, it's situational, and it was one, I mean, because that's not something I would do. In fact, I was telling Sam and Buffy, my two...
Naughty girl.
I was going to say, don't blame her for this, okay? I mean, she might have got them in the room, but yeah, you went...
It was so amazing, because I was telling them, you know, I said, under normal circumstances, I had this pathology about needles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can just swoon, you know, having, you know, a flu shot. But here I was, you know, being like a little pincushion, and it was very interesting. So big shout out to Buffy and Sam.
Well, see, and that's, I'll just mention this. I was actually remarking this to Monk last night. I was reading something, and I can't think of what it was now, but your body, your physical body, does not distinguish between arousal from fear and arousal from good things. It only understands, arousal.
That's right.
And it's just the emotional things that we put around it, you know, we've been taught, getting a shot, you're in a doctor's office, context, again, this is bad, but if you can kind of re-script yourself to go, I'm going to have needles stuck in me now, and it'll be good. Yeah, but you can kind of retool, and you can kind of recast your whole experience.
It's so true.
You know, I always use the joke, the happy status dance.
Yeah.
You know, I am not a masochist by any stretch of the imagination, but when you do the little, and the little clap your feet, of course, everyone's like, okay, cool.
I'm ready.
And I do the same thing where I'm like, I'm really enjoying doing this terrible thing to you, and the person you're with goes, bring it, cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you feed off of that.
You feel each other.
But, you know, for so many people, probably a lot of folks in our audience, I mean, that is completely foreign. Mm-hmm. That is just like... completely out there, you know.
And yet, you know, people do things that are painful all the time and enjoy them. They, climb
rocks
and mountains
runners high,
and, yeah, they do all kinds of things.
Eat hot sauce, you know, like the guys who get, like, the incredibly insane hot sauce, so, like, their heads are sweating, like, why? Because it feels really good. It's like, you're getting endorphin. You're, like, you're self-topping yourself.
Yeah, you're
a masochist.
You're a food masochist.
So, say I was a rank amateur and I didn't have a clue about the correct vocabulary or subculture etiquette. I didn't know where to start, but I knew for certain that I had a submissive streak that I wanted to investigate. Would you be someone I could turn to?
No. Yes, of course I could.
You have information on your sites, but you're not, open for, you know, the rank amateur necessarily?
I am, you know, that sounds mean. I will say that.
There's mean in it. There's not.
Yeah, I know. I want. Yeah, obviously, I want to. You know, I want to encourage people. Yeah. I want to empower people. I want to, you know, give them what they need. I'm one person. I'm not the right BDSM partner for everyone.
Right.
There are certain, and I am fortunate enough professionally to be at a place in my career and personally to be go, no, I'm really going to pick and choose the people who are really well suited to me,
right.
And I know exactly what that
yes.
is. But I'm always happy to try and kind of redirect people
right.
to people who I think would be actually
good.
Better suited to them. Because
yeah. And that's the important thing, is it not? I mean, like if you know, I have a sore throat, I'm not going to go to a cardiologist.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't understand that. Like, well, no, but you're a mistress and I want to be submissive. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really the right kind of mistress for you. Why don't you go see Lady? Why don't
yeah.
you go see Mistress Catherine? And it's like,
yeah.
And so this, it's fine. I mean, because I know what experiences are possible
yeah.
with the right partner.
Right.
And I just like, yeah,
yeah.
Let me just steer you. So
oh, interesting.
I do pick and choose. Yeah, definitely.
Good. Would you be up for sharing something of your private life? You do afford yourself a private life, yes?
Well, it's not going to be private once I talk
yeah.
about it, is it? But sure, ask away, darling.
I wouldn't
just
want our audience...
Just Aquaman costume, okay?
I wouldn't want our audience to think that your life as a sexual superhero is all work and no play.
Oh, no.
You mentioned earlier that you are polyamorous. Has that been part of your life for a long time?
Yeah. I've never really been monogamous. I didn't always have the language that
yeah.
I have for it now, and God knows I didn't always do it very well.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, people ask me questions like, I know, because I tried that too. You can't do it that way. So, yeah, I have always been someone who was open to and capable of sustaining multiple romantic relationships at the same time.
Mm. I think so, too. I'm as well, and I find it's really, really difficult because, again, a lot of people don't understand that you know, you've got to choose, and or you've got to love this person a whole lot more than this person, or you can only love the person you're married to or in relationship with. And that just
once again,
seems
it's a binary kind of system
binary
that we've all.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
That's what it is.
And it's a hard one to shake.
It's
so
the hardest one.
Ingrained.
It
yeah.
is the
fear
hardest one.
Yeah,
it's so ingrained in us.
Yeah.
yeah.
I
was talking to someone the other day, and they were talking about their poly partner, and they were actually with their partner, and their poly partner's other partner was there as well. And somebody was watching this interaction, and you know, they said to me afterwards, they said, isn't that embarrassing? Isn't that embarrassing for, you know, for your husband or your wife, or you know, to be identifying somebody else that you are having sex with right while you're there?
Yeah, I've seen that happen too. Yeah. It's like, only if you think that being poly is inherently a bad thing.
Yeah.
If you
or that, you know, genitals are, you know, the best way to deciphering what fidelity is.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
It's interesting. It's and yet, we're as you say, we are really, really stuck. Anyhow, in the little time that we have left, I want to turn our attention to a special area of interest to me as a therapist. And I often hear from kinksters and pervs, as well as your run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk, that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals. And I know that you're equally attuned to this, too, because you speak to professional groups about this very subject, right?
I have done so, yes.
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 So can you tell us a little bit about what you encounter, you know, in the presence of, you know, doctors and or therapists?
Well, I mean, they're often not any better educated about BDSM than the average layperson.
Right.
And if they are educated, often it's come from kind of a pathologizing kind of way. So it's, you know, like I went and did a you know, sort of a little teaching thing recently with Elena Gabosh, who's awesome, at Seattle Counseling Services, which is a sort of mainly gay and lesbian kind of
mm-hmm.
focused organization. And it's interesting how just because someone is a member of one sexual minority
right.
does not mean necessarily
oh,
you
God,
about
yeah.
others.
It's another one, yeah.
Although, you know, they can be, certainly. And they were a great, great bunch of people, awesome people, and it's a great place. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, I think it's one of the arguments for being out, and to the greater degree as you can,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, you're going to encounter people in the world who you can educate about sexuality. Some of them will be therapists.
Mm-hmm.
it's always frustrating when someone who is a sexual minority, you know, wants to go to see a therapist about something else.
Right.
And but you have to go in and sit down with the therapist and go, okay, so here's the thing. At this, but me being kinky is not the problem. The problem
right.
is blah 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 blah.
Right.
But they're like, oh well, because I'm like, they want to
yeah.
go back to the
right.
kink. I'm like,
right.
yeah, no, that's really not the problem. The problem is not that I'm poly. The problem is not that I'm a sex worker. The problem is this other thing.
Right.
And you have to kind of get them around, yeah. and then you know. But I've been lucky enough to find when I needed them good therapists.
Good.
But there is a website called Kink Aware Professionals
mm-hmm.
that
I'm on that, I think.
Are you
yeah.
good? Yeah. I wish that we had a better system of developing those resources, but I think that's kind of coming.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for now, it's kind of an uphill battle. I'm just
right.
trying to collect more names and addresses.
Yeah.
It's
funny because, you know, I hear from clients that they have gone to other therapists and, you know, for X amount of time and, you know, it was all about educating the therapists
yeah.
on their dime.
Yeah, isn't mm-hmm. that nice? Yeah.
And there is no guarantee that the therapist after the education was going to be any more sensitive than
precisely.
What he or she started out to be at the beginning. So it's really a bummer.
It's frustrating.
But, you know, my counsel to folks is always, you know, do your homework. Don't stand for nonsense. You know,
mm-hmm.
these people are there to help you. Doctors and therapists are there to help you, not the other way around.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you run into a brick wall, you know, look around. A lot of people, a lot of therapists are doing counseling, you know, remotely, like through Skype and things like myself included, so that, you know, for the folks who are stuck in podunk,
you know, can. I think that's great. I am
it
so
is.
Happy about that.
It is.
There's
it's
so
a great
many
thing.
Really neat people around
right.
that you have access to.
Yeah. Anyhow, our time is up again for this week, and it was everything I was hoping for.
I love
and
when
I'm
people
so,
tell
you know,
me that. Yeah.
And Dick, those marks, a
yes.
little Bactine, you'll be just fine, okay?
Right. Because good. When I wear my low-cut outfit for Pride, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
You'll
be
all sparkly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and it was well worth the wait.
Oh,
God. The year
you.
And a half.
Oh, thank you.
But
thank
who's
you.
Counting?
Okay.
So before we conclude, would you give us your websites again and walk us around a bit?
Well, my blog is at mistressmatisse.blogspot.com. Lots of bits of, you know, irreverent wisdom and random silliness there.
And shopping.
And from there, you can jump to my Twitter feed, my Flickr, all of my little random
mm-hmm.
social networking things there. And I have a column at thestranger.com under my name, Mr. Matisse, Control Tower. So I'm there on the Stranger site with all the picture people. And then, love them as I do. And then I have a professional site at mistressmatisse.com.
Cool things. And we can listen to your podcasts on your Blogspot.
Yeah, it's linked
right.
off. Linked off
yeah.
there. Yeah, we need to get back into that.
Right.
Well, this
right.
has been a good thing for us. So
yeah.
thank you
right.
for having us.
Right.
Too.
And you know, I'm pleased to have you both, as you know, because you know I'm such big fans, and now that we are actually have a friendship going beyond you know just my you know.
Stalking
schoolgirl crush.
Schoolgirl, do you have? You got an outfit for
that? Oh, I think we should go now. Ladies.
Yeah, this is getting bad.
This is getting
okay, kids.
Well, on that
blushing.
Note,
I didn't know you could
yes,
blush that
I,
far up your forehead.
I really can. Like way back to where God didn't intend it. Anyhow, with that, we will conclude, and we wish you the very, very best, and we will be seeing you in cyberspace until we speak again.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
What a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Be serious. You are not trying. You are whining.
Sometimes my trying sounds like whining, but honestly, I'm trying. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Papaya Toys. At Papaya Toys, being eco-friendly is not just a slogan, it's their business. Every step in the manufacturing and packaging process is scrutinized to see how best they can limit their impact on the environment. How many other sex toy companies can say that? And their zeal for perfection delivers high-quality, fun products at an affordable price. For Papaya Toys, quality means attending to every detail in every aspect of the product's development, from selecting the highest grade materials to collaborating with progressive manufacturing partners, from superior customer service to consumer education. In the end, we, their customers, get a safe, reliable, extremely pleasurable toy that will help each of us rediscover passion. If you're not the proud owner of a Papaya toy by now, you soon will be. Look for the Papaya Toys banner right there on the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. One final thing, I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now you can see what's hot and what's not in adult products.
This is a shining beacon of hope.
You can say that again. You can find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies, sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.